coming up on KUCB News, we have got a full newscast for you featuring a potential coffee shop in Acatan, proposed increases to state spending, and stories from the KUCB archives, including a man who survived 2 days drifting at sea. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Thursday, February 21st, 2019. This week, KUCB is profiling the finalists of the 2019 Aleutian Marketplace Competition, which awards grants to aspiring entrepreneurs from the region. The contenders stand to win between $3,000 and $10,000 from the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Community Development Association. And today, we'll hear from Anchorage resident Hallie Hanna Stepitin. She recently spoke with KUCB's Zoe Sobel about her plans to bring espresso to Acatan with Peanut and the Bean Cafe.
Years ago, you know, my dad, when he heard about the Aleutian Marketplace Fellowship, he wanted to build a little coffee shop on his property in Acatan because we don't have an espresso shop in Acatan. Acatan's a tiny little village, but we have this huge fishing plant there. We have Trident, and we have a lot of fishermen coming in and out, and the ferry stops there. So there's just all these people coming in and out of Acatan, and then the local residents who want espresso and who want mochas and lattes and all these different kind of drinks that we haven't been able to provide because nobody's gotten like an espresso maker or trained baristas. And we sort of want the coffee shop to double as both a cafe where you can buy espresso, but also where we make different baked goods, as well as offer as like a community space with artwork on the wall, because we're also artists and Acatan is a huge artist community.
Right now, like, what do you do in Acatan if you want coffee?
You just buy coffee at the store. I know a few years ago they started getting, like, whole bean coffee, and everyone loved it because it's fresh. It's more fresh than Folgers, for example, not just doggone Folgers, but because it's always probably going to be a staple out there. My brother, when he comes down, because he used to be a barista, he would always bring his own pound of, you know, super organic fair trade coffee with him. We don't have that opportunity to get organic fair trade coffee, single source coffee, and that's what we want to highlight in this coffee shop.
If you're selected for the first prize or the second prize or the third prize, how would that help you jumpstart your business?
So the most expensive thing that we need is the espresso maker. So we're going to use whatever funds we get to invest first in an espresso maker, and then we're going to go from there. We already have a space in Acatan, luckily. There's an old cafe building that isn't in use right now that's owned by the corporation that we plan to lease from. And they have an industrial kitchen, which is great for the whole baking part of our cafe. We just want to use that initial money to buy an espresso maker and start investing in different things that we would need, like flour and sugar, and finding all these sources and figuring out the cost of shipping, which is going to be probably the most expensive.
That was Hallie Hanna Stepitin speaking with KUCB's Zoe Sobel. Stepitin and the other finalists are currently competing for Aleutian Marketplace funding in Juneau. The winners will be announced March 1st. Tomorrow will be the last day on the job for James Keck, the director of Unalaska's clinic. He resigned in December after less than a year and a half with Illilook Family and Health Services.
I just wanted to be closer to family and grandkids, and, you know, I'm still here to support in any way I can, as long as the board wants me. People have my cell phone, and I'll still have the same number, so feel free to give me a call if you need anything.
Keck has taken a job at a clinic in Corvallis, Oregon, but he's offered to help Unalaska's operation long-term as its board of directors searches for his replacement.
Normally, when you leave, it's done, but I understand how hard it is to recruit, and I understand the challenges that are happening in here at Ilulik. So I offered that.
The clinic had three interim directors before Keck started in the summer of 2017. Since then, the clinic has updated its medical records system, switched to a new billing software, and started working to integrate services with the nonprofit Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association. Both of Unalaska's basketball teams are trying to extend their winning streaks today at the Raven Invitational in Dillingham. The Raider girls play first at 4:30 against New Stuyahok, then the boys' squad takes on Dillingham at 6. KUCB will broadcast both matchups live here on 89.7 FM, along with the rest of the Raiders' games this weekend. You can check out our Facebook page for the full schedule. The Unalaska City School District's Board of Education meets tonight. School board members are expected to share their takeaways from a recent legislative fly-in to Juneau, where lawmakers are debating the state budget with Governor Mike Dunleavy. The governor has proposed cutting public school funding by about $300 million across the state, and that's a number that has local educators worried. Charity Kitsick is a fifth-grade teacher and parent.
We've lived in other communities and, like, you know, class sizes of, like, 30 kids and, you know, no sports and no after school activities and all of those things that you get here, all of those things are the things that are at risk, the reasons why we live here and have our children here.
Beyond the budget, board members will discuss the school calendar and teacher contracts for the next academic year. The school board meets tonight at 7 o'clock at the high school library. Alaskans have heard a lot about the programs that Governor Dunleavy is proposing to cut from the state budget, like education, healthcare, and state ferries. But what you might not have heard is that Dunleavy is also proposing to increase funding on a handful of items. Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk has the story.
Mike Dunleavy campaigned on shrinking Alaska's budget. And when he unveiled his proposal last week, he focused on the areas the state could spend less money.
My budget is different. My budget says enough is enough.
Given that preamble, you might be surprised to hear that Dunleavy's budget still found room to spend more money on a handful of items. They represent some of the governor's core priorities, like public safety and criminal justice, along with some non-negotiable state obligations, like the system that pays pensions to retired teachers and other public employees. There's even a big project in the state capital budget, a new $25 million visitor center for Denali State Park. It's designed to give people better access to the southern part of Denali, so they don't have to drive from Anchorage all the way to the National Park entrance in Healy. Matt Wedeking is a top state parks official.
It would bring people within almost a, it would be a day trip from Anchorage for people to come up and experience the Denali country.
In the operating budget, Dunleavy is proposing a slight spending boost for the state court system. Alaska's courts, in response to the state's huge deficit, have been closing on Friday afternoons, and the spending increase would allow them to reopen. But that $3 million boost pales in comparison to a couple of the other increases in Dunleavy's proposals. Among them is spending $37 million more, or about 14%, on the public employees' pension systems. Those pensions are constitutionally promised to retirees, and the payments necessary to fulfill those promises are forecast to nearly double over the next decade. Another increase is spending on cash tax credit payments owed to oil companies, reimbursing them for expenses they racked up while looking for oil and developing projects. Dunleavy wants to retroactively spend $84 million in the current year's budget on top of about $100 million that's already set aside. Then he wants to spend $170 million next year. Matt Shuckrow is a spokesman for the governor, and he says there's a law that requires the state to make the payments.
You know, this is our obligation. There's a number of things that happen if we don't do this, and so we're going to continue on with the making a statutory minimum.
Shuckrow is right that there's a state law that defines the amount of the oil and gas tax credit payments each year. But there's also a law that dictates how much money the state should set aside for each student at Alaska's schools, and Dunleavy's budget chose to disregard that law. Maintenance of the state school system is also a constitutional requirement, just like the payment of promised pensions. But Shuckrow says there's a clearer process for determining the size of the annual pension payments.
Those are not necessarily negotiated. The number is not something that is arbitrarily found. There's actual calculations done on an annual basis based on participation, beneficiaries, actuary analysis, you know, if the cost of healthcare goes up, then the spending increases.
Shukro is saying that the payments to the pension system are typically guided by nonpartisan analysts and aren't the subject of much debate in the legislature. School spending, by contrast, is more political and often the subject of negotiations. As for the Denali Visitor Center, Shukro says it aligns with the Dunleavy administration priority of encouraging growth, and it leverages a donation from Princess Cruises, and it's also projected to generate cash for the state. Not everyone is convinced that the new project is the best use of limited state money for capital projects, however. Walt Monaghan was the public safety commissioner for the previous governor. He resigned when Dunleavy was sworn in. He says he was disappointed to see that Dunleavy cut some of the previous administration's ideas out of the capital budget, like a new plane for first responders.
You're talking to an old police officer now. Our tourists can't enjoy all that Denali has to offer if we can't get them there safely. Or if there is an issue that happens up there, how do we respond to get them out of there? I would put that enhanced visitor center in a nice to have, as opposed to a must-have.
The legislature is currently reviewing Dunleavy's budget plan in committees, and lawmakers have the power to boost or reduce his proposed spending levels. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Unalaska Community Broadcasting has covered local news for the past 20 years, and to mark the anniversary, KUCB is spending every Thursday of 2019 looking back at our former reporters and sharing some of their stories. This month, we're focusing on Charles Homans. He filed this report in July of 2006 after a Japanese car carrier capsized in the North Pacific with 23 crew members on board.
The Cougar Ace, a 654-foot car carrier, began listing and leaking oil 230 miles from Adak Island in the North Pacific Sunday night. The cause of the emergency remains unknown. The ship was on its way from its home port of Singapore to Vancouver, British Columbia, with a cargo of nearly 5,000 vehicles when it began having problems, sending a distress signal at 11:09 p.m. The rescue was performed by helicopter crews from both the Coast Guard's Air Base Kodiak and Kulas Air National Guard Base in Anchorage. One member of the ship's crew was injured on Sunday night, suffering a fractured ankle. He was flown to Anchorage with an interpreter early this morning and is awaiting surgery. The rest of the crew was taken to the community clinic on Adak Island. Michael Terry, the nurse practitioner at the clinic, said that injuries were mostly limited to cuts and bruises suffered when the Cougar Ace capsized. Crew members told him it happened very quickly.
You know, they basically had to get out onto the deck and prop themselves up and kind of hole up there to be safe. And someone actually had injuries from actually crawling out to get to the deck.
While the physical injuries were minor, Terry says that the harrowing experience had left a strong impression on many of the crew members.
A couple of guys were up during the night, unable to sleep. They're having nightmares. A number of guys just laying in their cots, staring out, not talking, but not sleeping, either. I'm sure there's a lot of traumatic stress going through there.
With the crew safely returned to land, attention is turned to the matter of the ship itself, which is still floating on its side near the location of the accident. The vessel was carrying about 150,000 gallons of fuel, according to initial reports from the ship, and a sheen currently stretches at least 2 miles from the Cougar Ace. Gary Foley of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation is monitoring the spill.
What we're doing is trying to get as much information from the Coast Guard as we can. Right now, it's pretty far offshore, but that doesn't mean it's going to stay offshore. I'd like to try to figure out the track line for this vessel and make sure that everything that can be done to salvage this vessel is done before it has any kind of impact on our waters.
Foley says the DEC is going to use models to estimate where the oil might drift from the wreck. He says that if the oil spill remains where it is, there's not much his agency can do.
If it stayed where it is and it spilled oil, it's not logistically possible to conduct a cleanup that far offshore, nor would it be safe.
Greg Bierman, an American spokesman for the ship's owner, the Tokyo-based maritime company Mitsui OSK, says the company is currently weighing its salvage options.
There are no crew members on board the vessel at this point, so it is premature to say the exact condition of the vessel and what the end plan will be for salvaging it. Company officials are negotiating with a salvage operator, and they'll be making some decisions on proceeding to the vessel. That'll obviously have to happen by ship, so it's a fairly long process of getting there. Once they're there, they'll analyze the extent of the damage and possibly the reasons for the damage, and they'll make their determinations on how to proceed at that point.
Not much is known about the condition of the ship's cargo. Mazda has claimed ownership of some, but not all, of the vehicles on board. In On Alaska, I'm Charles Homans.
The same week that Homans covered the Cougar Ace in 2006, he also filed this story about a ranch hand who survived 2 days drifting at sea. Here again is Charles Homans.
Bo Zielinski is lucky to be alive. That's what the Coast Guard crew members say, the ones who pulled him out of the Bering Sea near Unalaska Island on June 30th. When they found him, Bo had been drifting for 2 days in a small work skiff with his dog Teddy, 10 miles from the shore of Unalaska. He had lost his outboard motor while he was crossing Umnak Pass.
The outboard came off of the skiff. It came off the skiff and plunged into the ocean, and it was gone. I realized that, you know, this might be the end of Bo.
Bo Zielinski is 22 years old. He's worked as a ranch hand in the Aleutian Islands for 2 years. If you haven't spent much time in the Aleutians, this probably sounds like a joke. But in fact, there are two ranches in the eastern part of the island chain. One is a sheep ranch at the otherwise uninhabited port of Chernovsky, about 80 miles southwest of Dutch Harbor on Unalaska Island. The other is a large cattle ranch on nearby Umnak Island. Bo has worked at both of them, and on June 30th, he was traveling between the two across the difficult waters of Umnak Pass. The trip only takes about an hour by skiff, which is why Bo wasn't better prepared when his motor hit a submerged object and jarred loose from the boat, dropping out of sight in the deep water. Bo didn't have a spare motor, and he didn't have any oars except for one that had been improvised out of a 2x4 with a chainsaw. When he tried to use his radio, he realized that it was broken. He had no food and no fresh water.
So then I just kind of laid down in there with my dog, and I kind of panicked a little bit, and I thought, you know, I gotta do something. I can't just sit here and drift out to sea. You know, I'm right there. I'm almost to the harbor. So what I did was I had this float coat on, and what I did wasn't a very smart thing to do, but I was kind of panicked, and so I tied the bowline on the from the skiff around my waist, and then I jumped in the water and I started swimming. After a while, it was too cold and just wasn't working too good, so I got back into the skiff, and I barely made it back into the skiff.
Yeah, this well, Bo, I know this
Bo is
the,
lucky to be alive.
He so lucky.
Broke all the rules of the sea. He went out in too small a boat. He didn't have a spare motor. He didn't have any oars, and he didn't
yes,
have
he
any
did.
Communication.
He, had oars.
Huh?
He tried to row, so I know he had
That's
oars.
Milton and Cora Holmes, and they know what they're talking about. Cora lived for 18 years at the Chernovsky Sheep Ranch. Milton spent 37 years there. The skiff that Bo took across the pass had belonged to the Holmes family, although they never knew where it came from. It washed up on the beach near Chernovsky 20 years ago. The family dragged it to the sheep ranch by horse, and Milton named it the Derelict.
Well, it was a derelict, so I thought that'd be a good name for it. They found it on the beach. It was certainly a derelict when they got it.
I saw a plane the second day, too, but they never saw me. I ate a little bit of kelp, too, on the second day. You know, I didn't have any food, and so I said a little prayer to God, and I said, you know, I need something to eat. And then later on during the day, a clump of seaweed kelp came by, and drifted right next to the boat. And so I got it, and I ate it. My dog was eating kelp, too. It was real calm on the third day. It was dead calm. It was calmer than the other 2 days, and I knew that there would be a storm after the calm. And if we had a bad storm, I knew I'd be dead, or pretty close to it.
On that afternoon, June 30th, the Coast Guard cutter Morgenthau was on a routine patrol off the coast of Unalaska Island. Lieutenant Junior Grade Miles Jenkins Jr. was on the bridge.
As we were altering course, one of my guys spotted what seemed to be a small boat, about 6-7 nautical miles out, and was like, well, usually there aren't any small boats out this far out. So it made another change of course, headed towards the guy.
And then I heard this chopper, and I couldn't figure out what the deal was. I thought maybe someone had called the Coast Guard or something. And when I turned around, the fog had lifted, and this boat was going by me.
As everything is going on, you really don't think about, this is a rescue case or anything like that.
What they did was they put a skiff in the water, and they came out and got me. And the guy who was driving, he came up and he said, "Well, hey, how you doing over there?" He says, and so I said, "Well, I'm sure glad you guys showed up." I said,
Bo was treated for hypothermia and malnutrition on the Morgenthau and taken to Unalaska for more medical care. 2 weeks later, he caught a boat ride out to Umnak Island and went back to work. As for the derelict, it's been given back to the waves that first washed it up at Chernovsky. The crew of the Morgenthau sank it in the Bering Sea. In Unalaska, I'm Charles Homans.
That was Charles Homans, the third reporter in the history of Unalaska Community Broadcasting, with a pair of stories from 2006. Join us next Thursday when we'll re-air another one of his stories as part of our year-long series celebrating the 20th anniversary of KUCB's newsroom. You can also check out Homans' current work in the New York Times Magazine. And finally, Unalaskans have a number of winter events to look forward to this weekend. The annual Polar Bear 5K Run is Saturday afternoon, hosted by the city's Department of Parks, Culture, and Recreation. Following that is the Phil-Am Association's Winter Ball on Saturday night, and the Polar Bear Plunge at the Lake on Sunday, organized by the Methodist Church. The local Shaler Mountain String Band is also hosting an open mic night on Saturday, which they will kick off with a performance of their own.
I fall on my knees and I pray to you, come and stay with me, come and stay with me.
You can check out the Shaler Mountain String Band in the latest installment of KUCB's Tiny Desk Concert Series. That's airing tomorrow night on Channel 8 TV at 8 o'clock and 10. And you can find more information on all of this weekend's events online at the KUCB Community Calendar. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.